Salut, mon ami.
Look at our man here. Pierre LeBrun's walking in the studio.
I'm like, am I getting attacked here? Left.
Good seeing you, buddy. Come
we're
on in.
On air. Yeah. We're on air.
Yeah, we're good. Come on in. Come on in.
Hockey guys on air?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Roberto Luongo. And the first thing that should be pointed out is he's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Right? But because of the fascination.
I don't know anymore. People seem to be questioning my.
He's a lock, in my opinion.
He's got to be a lock. I think he's
the
first ballot guy.
Wins. Like, come on. Yeah.
Don't you think he's the first ballot guy?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if he wasn't. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lock of a Stanley Cup, I don't think, is something that can be gauged as highly as it used to in a 31-team league. I mean,
right. Pierre, don't you
we're going to have a lot of great players that don't win Stanley Cups, let's
right.
be honest.
And Ginla.
Don't you think when it's like, Ginla's name pops up and Roberto, and not saying that they're, I think they're both going, they are automatic first
Matt Sundin went in the first year.
Don't you think people that have been like around the Hall of Fame and guys' names keep getting dug up, they're like, thank God there's a newer guy. Like, thank God he's there so I can just say, boom.
Right.
It's almost like a bit of recency bias. Not in this particular case, but you want some fresh blood.
Yeah, you also want to get it right. I was really happy with Guy Carboneau yesterday. I know it led to a lot of debate, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people having different takes on it. I just know that I watched him play at his best, and he was the best defensive center in the league before people knew what that was. And so I thought it was great to get that one right in a year in which there weren't any first-year obvious players to put in.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, next year will be amazing. Jerome Ginla will get in. It'll be a shoe-in. That'll be tremendous.
Yeah.
Just like Haley Wickenheiser was a shoe-in this year.
Yeah,
absolutely.
She is the headliner. And I think it's tremendous for the women's game. You know, both my daughters play hockey, that the face of the 2019 class is not an NHLer. It's Haley Wickenheiser.
That's right.
And I love that.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's terrific.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, in my stance, I kind of feel bad having Hall of Fame takes because it's not Guy Carboneau's fault. He had
right.
a great career. He was a great player.
Right.
Right. That's what I mean. I'm okay with the debate.
Right. I've always felt, and this goes across the board with every sport, you should know the guy's a Hall of Famer the second he retires.
Everyone sure. like everyone says automatic in.
Right. And if you're not that second, you still had a great career. But I'm sorry, the Hall of Fame should be cherished, and it shouldn't be easy to get in.
But I know you watched him play, so you have a take that's based on knowledge. And what I didn't like yesterday is there are a lot of younger reporters who just went at the numbers. And said, "Well, his numbers. Yeah, he's not making it for his offense.
500 points. Like it's not like I. When I heard the name, like playing against him for many years. Like I know he was a little bit older, but
I caught him on it. Yeah,
but he was like
very
he was the guy.
He's
like
a great player.
I brought this up, and we were talking about it in break. Like I compare him to Patrice Bergeron. Now, Bergeron gets more points. I think Bergeron is more talented
on the field. And he'll be an interesting case, too. He won't be a Hall of Famer for everyone.
Bergeron?
I think he will be for me.
Oh, but
slam dunk, Pierre.
I don't know if he'll be for everyone. He is for me.
Yeah,
but,
he is for me, too.
How many Selkies did Guy Carboneau win?
Three.
How many has Bergeron won?
Around the same, I think.
Yeah, I think, again, the difference is the international pedigree, where Carboneau wasn't on the 87 Cup team, the 91
now,
Cup team.
Again, before the Olympic players really got to play in his heyday. I mean, if the NHL players went to the Olympics in the 80s, he might have been their fourth line center.
Maybe.
On those
but the Canada games. Cup existed in 87 and 91, and the best players were there.
No,
it doesn't matter. We're not here to take a run.
It's a great debate.
Good for him. He's in.
I'm right, you're wrong. It's a good debate. All right, what else?
There you go. Well, this okay, let's touch on this Roberto Luongo stuff.
You've had your calculator out all day here.
Because he retires today, and Florida gets hit with $1 million cap hit, give or take, for the next 3 years.
About $1.1 million.
Yeah, and they're okay with that. Apparently, they wanted that. Vancouver gets absolutely sewered here. I think the league should step in here. I think this is completely unfair. I think it's horrible for business.
Yeah.
We're talking about fans. It's the entertainment business.
Right.
The CBA has changed. There's term limit now. These cap circumventing deals are gone. That's why they put in these penalties, to scare teams. It's gone. Why is Vancouver getting penalized for this?
You know, I don't know how much time we have on this. When this CBA came out, and you guys know I was covering the lockout in New York. And I was one of the first guys, once I got my hand on the raw edition of the CBA before it went out to everyone, to look at this cap recapture penalty. This is new. This didn't exist before. And when I wrote about it at the time, I called it the Luongo rule. Someone reminded me today, they sent me an old Google article from January 2013 where I referred to the cap recapture penalty as the Luongo rule, thinking that one day this would happen, I swear to God.
Right.
Now, as it turns out, it could have happened to Chris Pronger had he retired. He went on LTI. It could have happened to
Marin Hossa,
yeah. And now even Ryan Callahan, who's going to go on LTI, but had he retired. Bill Daly will tell you that he warned teams in the lead up to that lockout to stop negotiating backdiving deals.
Right.
And he says, I'm telling you, there will be a rule in the next CBA that will hammer you guys for if you keep doing these deals. So he will tell you that teams were warned to stop doing it, and Vancouver went out.
Yeah, but that's not Jimmy Benning's problem.
That's the thing. And it's not
Jim Benning inherits this. He had nothing to do with it. That's what stinks for the Canucks right now.
But it doesn't address their fans, Pierre, again, which right. I think gets lost with this every league.
Right.
It's the fans get screwed here.
Maybe the Canucks at some point this summer will bring it up with the league. I mean, if you remember when the New Jersey Devils, when Kovalchuk did the I'm going to Russia thing.
They retracted that.
They were hammered way harder than it ended up being. They still got some charges, but they negotiated a different. Now, I think the league at the time thought this was so bizarre. He had just signed the deal and he was leaving 2 years later.
Right.
That they had to basically make a one-time ruling. It's a bit different than this. I have to say, this is truly the intent of the cap recapture.
I understand
rule.
That.
The thing is, every other guy who's been in his position hasn't retired. He's went on LTI so that he can collect money. I don't blame him. Roberto, one of a kind, is like, what's $3.6 million? I'm just calling it quits.
Mm-hmm.
That's Roberto Luongo.
By all accounts, the organization.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah, he's going to go into the organization or be a consultant.
Yeah.
And it would surprise me if they make it up to him financially.
Well, hopefully it's not for $3.6 million because that might raise eyebrows.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
He's going to make some money, I think. With exactly. Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider. All right, so.
I think Wodog just got that one there.
When you approach, like, this is such a different offseason because of the fascination with RFAs.
Yeah.
On Monday, you know, it's supposed to be all about the UFAs. We're all going to be in the building, but I don't think it's going to be all about the UFAs. I think Artemi Panarin could sign a monster deal, and the next second we hear a scoop that Mitch Marner is in Detroit talking with Steve Yzerman, and that's what all of the focus is going to be on. How are you handling the RFA reporting in particular?
I mean, it's never seen before in my 24 years covering the league. I mean, we've had offer sheets before, but they've come at us from left field with almost no preamble. You know, the Shea Weber one was completely out of nowhere and no one heard anything. This one has a ramp up. And the thing is, it's not just Mitch Marner here.
Will anybody
in Toronto
pull the trigger, though? There's ramp up. We've talked about ramp up and excitement and blah, blah,
blah.
You and
I talked on the phone yesterday. I still think it's the threat of more than the actual thing happening. But what makes this more interesting is that it's so many players. I just tweeted out some news. You know, Kyle Connor of the Winnipeg Jets got a bunch of calls today.
Right.
I'm telling you, if you're going to squeeze someone, Winnipeg's is certainly
a target.
What about
Carolina?
Right?
What about Tom Dundon?
Sebastian Aho's agent got some calls today, I put out on Twitter. And there's an owner that doesn't want to overspend.
Right.
But that's not overspending. That's the going rate.
Yeah. So the calls have gone out. And I don't know. I still think it's a means to an end for a lot of these agents, that it's just to put the feet to the fire to the teams they're trying to stay with. But maybe one of them sneaks through. Maybe one of them is like, you know what? I can't turn this down.
Well, what team are you focused on in terms of who's going to offer these big offer sheets?
Yeah,
like, I haven't heard a team definitively.
Yeah, and everyone's being very secretive about the teams that have phoned because it blows any chance if it leaks out, right?
Why would that be, though?
Because
I think
there's a lot at stake here.
Like what? What are you talking about, though? Reputation, relationships.
This is a huge risk for the team that's the predator here to follow through, and they don't want anything to come out before they actually do it. They will pull it off the table if it comes out before, is what I'm being told.
There's been a lot of talk about the Islanders. The one team I think that could do it and pull it off is the Rangers, because I think they're kind of they're trying to get younger, have younger players in there. I think the New York Rangers is one team that could pull it off.
This is just not what I've heard. This is just me doing logic.
Right.
I agree with the Rangers, Islanders, New Jersey Devils.
Mm-hmm. Ray Shiro goes
Ray
big
Ray Shiro's
game
not scared
He's
to do
not
this.
Shy.
I'll give you another curveball. Montreal Canadiens. Telling you right now, it would not shock me. I'm not
saying money.
I have no indication they would. I'm just saying I'm looking at my
This
list
is just
of teams.
You. This is you speaking.
Me.
Yeah.
This is a gut feeling. You know, you mentioned Steve Yzerman in Detroit. What better way to make a splash? Again, I don't think these guys are against the principle of it. I quoted Yarmo Kekalainen yesterday in Columbus, saying it's in the rule book. Why not? He's not saying he would do one, but he was saying he's not against it. And here's a team losing all kinds of free agents this summer. Why wouldn't Columbus look at it?
Who was the manager at the draft that swore and said, like, our
Ray
owners?
Sure. That was Ray Sure.
Yeah, it was Ray Sure. Right. That's right. Like,
but it's now, one thing to yell and scream about it.
But you're right.
Because
no kidding.
These guys, I understand why it is in the rule book, but it's been in the rule book for 6 years and no one's done it.
Now, here's the counter. I don't think it's about, you know, angering your colleague. That's been overplayed. I'll tell you what a couple of GMs told me at the draft in Vancouver. A couple of GMs that I thought, you know, I bet you you're in on it. He goes, you know, I'll tell you why I'm not going to do it. His point was, you give away four first-round draft picks for one of these mega RFAs. We think we're a good team. But what if you have one of those years, 3-4 years out, where everyone's hurt? Like Tampa a couple of years ago. They should have never missed the playoffs, but everyone was hurt. Bang, lottery pick. I don't want to trade a lottery pick. That's what the GM said, and it's a very interesting thing. What if you end up trading two lottery picks?
Yeah.
So that's, I still think at the end of the day, like Brian Burke did to get Kessel out of Boston, say what you want about that deal, but he threatened Boston all day long with the offer sheet so that he could make a trade instead. I still think that's the route here for teams looking at these players, if they think they can get them.
Well, the Leafs are in a bit of a different position now because, I mean, they're still up against the cap, but they unloaded the Marleau deal. Matthews and Nylander are done. They got one guy left.
Yeah.
You know, this is where we were talking about Winnipeg earlier. Well, they've got two. They've still got to get Laine and Connor done.
Winnipeg's an interesting one.
They are an interesting
question.
Because if it comes down to it, you might have to pick.
And just because I haven't reported, or Bob or Dregs, that Laine hasn't got a call today, it doesn't mean he hasn't, by the way.
But why would
we haven't heard that?
He should.
So
I would have called on him every day of the week. You know. But you have to call around on all of these players to see if any of them haven't even an inkling of an appetite.
No question.
Because as we've pointed out several times, these players have to sign it. They actually have to commit, like, I will sign an offer sheet to go to organization X.
That's a big deal. And I've said this story before, but when Shea Weber signed that offer sheet, even though it seemed like a means to an end, so that, because Nashville didn't have money back then, they had ownership problems. The spin at the time, I think, was, well, this is a way to finally get, he was arguably the best defenseman in the game at the time, or one of, still one of the best, but that back then it was the guy. Finally, I'm getting paid, so offer sheet from the Flyers and Nashville matches. But I will tell you, the immediate aftermath effect of that offer sheet was David Poile had the plant seeded in him that he was going to trade Shea Weber one day.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's...
Yeah.
It's a very emotional thing when you go through the offer sheet route.
But yeah, you take it personally.
You can't just say, this is a way to get my deal with you. It's a little...
Yeah.
You know, there are ways to get signed. Now, I don't blame the Marner camp from looking at every option here to get what they believe is fair. I think he'll end up signing with the Leafs. Here's the unfortunate consequence, even if he signs with the Leafs, let's say, on Sunday or Monday. The last 2 weeks leading up to Monday are the two most important weeks of the entire season to reshape your roster. And outside of trading Marleau and trying on Subban, the Leafs have been paralyzed by the Marner situation. And I've talked to other teams and agents about this who have had conversations with the Leafs, and the Leafs are like, I'll get back to you. We've got to figure out Marner. Now, that's not to say they won't do something here in the next few days before the Marner thing, but I'm just saying, in general, it's limited their ability
to be in
to
on
do
anything.
Some of the things. And what happens is, sure, maybe Marner signs Sunday or Monday, but have they missed out on things already that have transpired?
Right.
And you know,
trade or a player ends up moving somewhere else where they were in on that.
You can say all you want. You got all summer to fix your team, but a lot of the options evaporate in a hurry in this 2 week period.
Right. So, do you think that would be because Dubas really doesn't know what the number is going to be, or he doesn't truly believe that Marner actually wants to commit? You know, because that's two different stories.
Like,
two very different angles.
To be honest, it has to be at the end of the day, because he's not 100% sure he's going to get him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't get him, if he's forced to trade him, then presumably, I'm just going to throw this out as an example, not as something I think the Leafs are thinking of, so please don't radio me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're forced to trade Marner. And again, I'm on record. I think Marner signs with the Leafs. And in the last couple of days, by the way, I think the Leafs and Marner's camp have had some dialogue under the radar here. But if he doesn't sign and he's traded, does it not behoove the Leafs to at least phone our attorney Panarin's camp and say, hey, is it too late for us to have a conversation? So So that's an example of what I'm saying. You need time if you're the Leafs to pivot here if things don't go your way.
Right.
Everybody's got the pivot plan. If you don't, you're not doing your job.
I'm sure they do have the plan, but they have time to perform it.
Well, don't you think Dubas...
Like, you can't wait till Monday to call Panarin. Panarin's making his decision probably by Friday.
Right. But why wouldn't you, if you're Dubas, why aren't you calling these other RFAs? Like, why wouldn't you be calling Mikko Rantanen?
Who's to say they're not?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know that they
should
are,
be.
But yeah.
Like, I don't understand how you could explain what you're doing if you're not calling these camps.
The other thing I would say is this, and it's not so much tied to what happened with Liam Nylander, although I guess subconsciously maybe it is what I'm about to say, but should the Leafs draw a line here soon this week and say, this has to be figured out by this day?
No kidding. Well, this is our offer.
Like this can't be, this goes till camp here all over again.
They don't have that option again.
Right?
Because they're up against the cap. You know, again, with Nylander, with the backsliding, you know, front-loaded first-year cap hit, and then everything slides down after that. They're not going to have that availability this season. But it kind of felt like they were trying to put forth that front before the draft. You know, they've been saying since day one, when they were eliminated, priority one is to get Marner done.
Yeah.
We're not going to do it again. We've learned from past mistakes.
Right.
Problem is, it's not a problem. It's just a reality of business. It takes two to tango.
Right.
In Marner's camp, they don't have to follow those
guidelines. And again, from Marner's perspective, you can certainly see the validity in using now this RFA speaking period as your leverage.
Yeah,
it's hard to argue.
It's his right.
Yeah.
It's his right, just like we've talked about. It's other managers' right to use the CBA if they want to.
Yeah. And by the way, no other RFA signed.
Right.
Kyle Connor's out there. Patrick Laine's out there.
That's right.
The guy that I thought was going to sign right away is still not signed. Braden Point.
Mm-hmm.
Aho. Brock Besser.
Charlie McAvoy.
Go right down the
dying to come back to Boston.
None of these guys have signed. Matthew Tkachuk, by the way, I'm not sure how that first conversation went from what I heard last week between Calgary and Tkachuk. So,
yeah.
It's not like it, you know, we live in Toronto, so Marner is the.
Right.
But this is happening. This is a story that is shared on many fronts within teams and these high profile RFAs. And, you know, it's almost like everyone involved is like, I don't want to go first.
But that's what I was just thinking. If Braden Point goes first and he's on a nice, like some sort of slightly valued contract.
Tampa dollars.
Right.
Right. So then.
The old Nashville dollar. That's
there
right.
There could be a ripple effect.
Just got
whether
that
it
up here.
Potentially. Just got me back, brother. No, you're right. Because if that one went first, then you're like, for example, imagine if William Karlsson's 5.9 a year went before the Kevin Hayes one this summer.
Right.
You know, Hayes and Skinner sign, it's like, whoa, salaries are going up. But then Karlsson gives Vegas a deal.
Right.
It's interesting, the perception and the impact.
Absolutely.
And it's real. Like, I know you think we just say this in the media and we debate this on Overdrive. Every signing in this two-week juncture has a big impact on the conversations that are happening in real time between all these free agents and teams.
Right.
You know?
Oh, they've been
you
going
find your direct comp and you're like, bang, this is the freshest signing.
Yep.
I'm comparable to him.
Right.
I mean, again, if you're Matt Duchene and Kevin Hayes just got $7.14 million a year.
You're $10
million. Like, I'm sorry, but, you know.
Well, and Erik Karlsson, same thing. Tyler Myers' deal went up technically on paper or maybe by perception because Erik Karlsson, and they're not even comparable. And I'm just
Jacob
saying.
Jacob Trouba's extension's been affected.
Right.
It hasn't been signed yet.
It drags up. Everyone drags into that, the weight.
But then William Karlsson.
Brings
I could
down.
See a lot of front offices were happy. William Carlson at 5'9" is like, okay.
But that's William Carlson's happy too. I think he slept well last
night. That's
what
he wanted.
He's got 8 years in Vegas where there's no tax, and he's got a girlfriend from Vegas.
Very good team.
Yeah.
Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider in studio. What are you hearing on Jake Gardner? Like, he can talk with teams. I haven't heard his name come up.
He's going to do well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being the highest paid UFAD on Monday. It'll be between him and Myers. A lot of interest for a puck-moving D. You know, they've been handling a lot of calls on him at CAA in Los Angeles. They're keeping it tight. They don't want, you know, teams out there. But I think some of it's obvious, you know, the teams that need D.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't closed the door on Toronto. But again, here's another great example of where they've said, until we know what's going on with,
Yeah, because... You know, we were saying this earlier in the afternoon. You know, obviously the Mitch Marner conversation is a more interesting one because of who he is and everything that's going on here. But once he signs, if he signs, and the dust settles, their defense corps is still a mess.
Yeah.
Like, so something is going to have to give. Like, Nikita Zaitsev, as of today, is still on the Maple Leafs and still wants out.
And I don't think I can say this point enough. I mentioned this today on Leafs Lunch, but this isn't just about potentially replacing Gardner or replacing Zaitsev or Hainsey. The Leafs went into this offseason with an absolute plan to revamp the majority of their blue line. Not just fill some holes.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, this was going to be a big summer for them to rejig their entire blue line, you know, other than the obvious suspects. But, and, you know, they did dabble on PK Subban. They got in those talks. But so far, they haven't been able to get anything done there.
Right. Which, that, I mean, that's got to be incredibly frustrating for Dubas. And Babcock, for that matter, too. Like, you know, the head coach is sitting there saying, I'm on the hot seat here.
Yeah.
I got to improve. We got to win. Like, they have to win. They cannot accept. No one's going to accept them taking a step or two back. No way. Not with this roster. It's
supposed to be go time.
It's supposed to be. You got harder, all these star players.
They won't have the, no matter how many smart moves they make this summer, and I'm a Kyle Dubas believer, they do not come back with the same depth no matter how well it goes. Because at the end of the day, Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner went from free players to expensive players within one season.
Overnight.
So by definition, regardless, if you have the best offseason you can possibly can as a Toronto Maple Leafs, you're coming back as a 2.5-line team instead of a 4-line team.
Well,
I say that, you know, I'm sure we'll think that there's value. Right. Yeah, but I mean,
but they're going to have to make it work. Like, if the players, you know, here you go with your pressure now. Like, everyone's loved, like, I've said this repeatedly all week, because I think it's important to point out, it always comes off as negative with Mitch Marner, because, you know, people want him to sign, and people would prefer that he takes a cheaper number, all that kind of stuff. He's a local kid, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But when he's been on the ice, it's been nothing but optimistic takes, right. Nothing but rave reviews, nothing but we love Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, and William Nylander's a little bit different. But now, when you're making $10-11 million and other guys got to go, like Patrick Marleau's an example. You know, they're all writing these heartfelt messages. It's not going to be the same without you, Patty.
Right.
Well, when you sign for $11.6 million, he can't stay. But that's the truth.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. That's the truth. You know, like Babcock at the draft is like,
you should have been moderating those discussions with the.
No, I'm not blaming the players for taking the money.
Yeah.
But that's the truth.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, there's a direct impact on the cap system, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, they loved him, but basically their new contracts forced him out.
He's got to go. Like Babcock said at the draft, John Tavares may not have signed here if it wasn't Patrick Marleau. Well, Patrick Marleau's got to go because he did sign here.
Yeah.
Like, that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's business, but.
The other thing I would tell you, too, and whether it happens over the next few days or the next week or two, I think we're in for more trades than normal. Normally, this is more about.
No, I hope you're right.
No, normally this is more about signings.
In a row.
I hope you're right.
I've been right some years, by the way.
Yeah,
I hope so.
Here, hold that thought for 1 second, because we got to say goodbye to TSN too.
Right.
We'll continue on TSN Radio. We're back tomorrow on TSN 4 at 4 p.m. Pierre on TSN Radio. Continue with your thought.
No, I've just talked to a couple of teams this week that said the term on some of these UFAs are scaring them so much. As far as a commitment. And term is a new battle now for these teams. They're finally starting to learn their.
Right.
That they want to go out and acquire. I'll give you an example. Chicago went out and got Calvin DeHaan. Listen, number 5 defenseman, number 4 defenseman.
Right.
But the appealing part of his deal was that, I think there's 3 years left on it.
Yeah.
This idea of having to pay up 6 to 7 years for all these players on the market is beginning to scare teams more than before. And so, is it smarter to give up an asset to go get a player with 1 year left or 2 years left on his deal? At a number that's already locked in.
Right.
And I'm hearing more of that than I used to at this time of year.
That makes sense.
That's all I wanted to share.
Yeah,
I'm not saying blockbusters, but I think you might see a lot of these medium deals.
Yes. Listen, the NBA, they eventually, it's 4 and 5 year max contracts. That's the next hill these guys are going to die on, I believe.
They steal a line from Bill Daly.
Absolutely. Well, remember, that was the hill he was dying on. We're not going above 5 years. Thanks, Bill. I guess you're still dead on that hill because it went all the way to 8. All right, Pierre, good seeing you, buddy. Thanks.
Love you guys. That was great being on when I was on this year. And
yeah, I guess we won't see you again. Well, we'll see you on Monday at Free Agent Friends.
Yeah, I'll see you in person, yeah.
Yeah, but next September, we'll get back.
Do it again. Come up and see me at the cottage this summer, guys.
You got it, buddy.
Salut.
Salut. There's Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider.